Well, Elton John's mum might be getting rid of all his back records and things, but I don't think Alan Cotton's mum would have got rid of all his paintings. Alan is one of Britain's most distinguished landscape painters. He was a founder member of the Southwest Academy of Fine and Applied Arts. He was the Academy's president for its first 6 years, and he served on many committees, including the Fine Art Committee of the University of Exeter, the Devon Arts Forum, and the board of the Exeter Phoenix Arts Centre. His latest exhibition is currently on show at Messon's Fine Art in Cork Street, and a lavishly illustrated book by Jenny Peary, picturing the painter working intensively for his latest exhibition, has been published. It's called Alan Cotton, Giving Life a Shape. Good morning to you, Alan.
Hi, Judy.
Lovely to see you. How's the exhibition going, then?
With much relief, it's going very well, thanks. Yeah. And I think we sold about three quarters of them so far, which is terrific, really.
Gosh, how many paintings?
Well, there are 55 paintings in the show. Mm. And it's always a bit fraught because, you know, you work on your own for quite a period producing the work. Mm. And although we've done very well in the past, there's never a guarantee, yeah, especially in these times.
But you can't, when you've sold a few and you come back to Devon, you can't knock up another couple and take them back, hang them back up again then.
Funny, that was that easy. By the time I finished the show, I'm exhausted, actually.
And the paintings are all of the places that you've painted, from Heartland to,
yes,
Ireland.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot of Heartland paintings in North Devon, which is an amazing piece of coastline. But a lot from the west coast of Ireland, you know, where the clouds rush over the land, you know, and create wonderful swashes of light and shade. Very dramatic. Most unspoiled part of Europe, I think, west coast of Ireland. But there are some from sunnier climes like Provence and the north of Italy. I know Provence is dear to your heart, Judy.
Yes, yes.
But I go back there, you know, once a year to take in the good life, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only an exhibition, but a book. You've already had one book written about you. Jenny already did On Knife Edge.
Yes.
Which is, of course, how you paint with a knife.
Yes, very much that.
What's it called? A knife.
I call them painting knives.
Yeah.
A lot of people call them palette knives, but those are quite different animals, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But painting knives they are, and I have a lot of them. Actually, I've got a lot to share with the clients, but I only ever use about five, actually.
But you use brushes as well, don't you?
Well, I use brushes for the underpainting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once I draw on the spot a lot, make literally hundreds and hundreds of drawings. And then when I start on a canvas, I start with brushes and try and define some of the shapes and the composition, if you like. But every mark that you see in an exhibition is done with a painting knife. Mm. And I just love paint. And the knife gives me a real opportunity to use paint in quantity, great impasto sweeps, and, you know, doing a very large painting, and there are quite a few in this exhibition. Mm. It's a joy to lay the paint on, and it's a very childlike thing in a way.
Yeah.
In fact, when I have kids go into my studio, I mean, I say as a little indulgence, excuse me, some painter. And they do. And I say, no, 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 I need lots of more than that. Come on. You know, squeeze, squeeze, like your butter clenching.
Yeah.
And in a slightly different way. And they squeeze copious amounts out. And it's a hell of a turn on because to see all this paint laid out, you just want to use it, you know.
Colours a lot. I mean, I told you I used to do a little bit of painting at school, but I loved thick. I was never interested in watercolours. I wanted thick paint.
Real paint.
Real texture about it. The book is called Giving Life a Shape, and as I said, it follows you as you prepare for a major London exhibition.
Yeah.
Just try and give us a bit of a shape of how you do prepare. What happens when the thought occurs to you and you think, well, I've got an exhibition, here we go?
Well, there are two aspects of this, really. One is, of course, your commitment to the gallery. Messams is a very big gallery in London, one of the best, in fact, in the country. But it means preparing to put on an exhibition a long way ahead. The process, really, is that I visit locations that appeal to me. Mm. And I spend an enormous amount of time chasing around the landscape. And anybody who's been with me know that I'm chasing the light. And towards evening, which is where I love painting, I mean, it's a frenetic activity, trying to get the last glimmers of light as it streaks across the landscape and filling my mind with ideas. And I think that that is an extraordinarily exciting part when you've got a collection of ideas you want to explore. And so it's that, really, getting excited about the work and working on the process. Always in the back of your mind, though, is the date that you set. Mm-hmm. And you do have enormous responsibility to the gallery, because, after all, it's their living. And being in the West End, they have to make a lot of money to provide the space and all that.
Do you take photographs at all?
I'm not really a photographer. The thing is that I draw. And yeah. I think drawing is what actually identifies you with the landscape. Photograph you can take 100 in 10 minutes, and they probably mean nothing much to you afterwards, really. It depends. But for a painter, you have to get inside the subject. And so drawing and little notes and colour notes and all that is like a workshop of ideas, I guess. Mm.
And then all the really hard work is done when you get back to Devon and in the studio, is it?
It is. I'm really essentially a studio painter. Not entirely, but because I do some work on the spot as well in colour. But especially big paintings. I remember working at Heartland once upon the headland with a canvas which was 6 foot wide and about 5 foot high. And it seemed great at first, and then suddenly the wind starts to get up, and so you get more and more ropes tying the canvas down with bricks, and it becomes a hell of a logistical problem.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Especially the big paintings and all the commissions and all that are all done in the studio.
You've got a lot of pictures, paintings in the book of Venice as well, and I was thinking to myself, it must be an enormous challenge to find a subject that hasn't been exploited over the years by other artists. I mean,
yes.
Venice, is there a view of Venice? You have to find
yes.
the Alan Cotton angle.
This is the intimidating part. I mean, yeah. if you look at and love Singer Sargent's paintings of Venice, watercolours, for example, they're magnificent. I mean, who can paint better than that with watercolour? I don't think anybody can or ever will. But when you go to Venice, you're intimidated by all the visions and images you've seen. And so it takes a long time to start seeing it through your own eyes. And for me, it was when I took a studio there and became aware of the whole span of the day from very, very early morning to late at night. And I began to see the way the canal changes by the boats that come up it.
Mm.
And some days it's still like a mirror. And you're able to paint a mirror image of Venice. Sometimes it's churned up. You get the most wonderful abstractions of colour. And so I focus much on the reflections.
Mm.
And I think people who know my Venice paintings would say that the reflections are the substantial part of it, really.
Yeah, it's not just seeing the sight, it's getting a feeling. It's when you look, when I look at a painting, I want a feeling. I want an
yes.
emotion, not that looks like Venice. Or
yes.
And I was thinking when I saw the Venice pictures, I spend a lot of time in St. Ives, and thousands of people flock there, artists,
yes.
and have done since Sickert and Whistler yeah. and everybody, to paint the warmth of the sun, the light. And I always think, oh,
yes.
God, there's nothing new. There's, it's that view. And I
think this is engagement with the subject, and challenging yourself all the time, really. So that Venice, I think I have got an identity with it and produced paintings which I hope are very individual. I did some for the Queen Mary years ago, as you know, Judy, and these were big paintings on the main staircase. And one day I had a phone call from the head of Cunard, a man called Howard Franks, who said, Alan, you don't know me, but I'm Howard Franks, and I wondered if you'd like to come and spend a week in Venice with us, which seemed like a good idea at the time, and it was, with some kind of vague idea of doing a commission. And I had a great week with him drawing, and then when I met him in London, he brought the plans of his place in Miami and asked me if I would like to measure up the plans of the room with the measurements, if I'd like to actually see if I could paint a whole series of paintings for that one room.
Mm.
And I did those, and they are now in Miami.
Now, what would you have done if he'd said to you, come to Miami and paint? Does that area excite you at all?
I have been to Miami. It's
yeah.
not quite my bag, I don't think, really.
Maybe more down the Florida Keys sort of way, where you'd get...
Yeah, it could be. Until you get there, you
yeah.
don't know, really.
Yeah.
In any case, I think you need to spend a long, long time in a place to get to know it.
Mm.
I mean, when I painted in Ireland, we used to go there with the children, camping, and I looked at it and loved it, but never painted it till I'd read about it, been in the pubs, drank the beer, watched the dancing, listened to the music,
all research, all important research.
Terribly, actually.
Yes, terribly,
terribly.
Terribly important.
Yeah, but it made me kind of lazy because I didn't do much work for a long time, but it is part of it. You know,
I particularly like that painting you did of a pint of Guinness. That was really good. I could see your life had gone into that.
Yeah, well done.
also in the book, it looks at the relationship between the artist and the dealer, which, as you mentioned, yes, is a very important one. And a lot of artists aren't always lucky enough to have a great relationship, are they?
No, I don't know many painters that speak so well of their dealers. And in truth, it took a long time for David and I to get together and be the friends that we are. And, certainly when I first met him, he was the superior being because he had the gallery, he had all the influence and everything else. And it takes a long time for you to realise that maybe he needs me as well because, it is that kind of relationship.
Yeah. Did you meet him down here, didn't you?
I did. I met him down in the southwest when I was doing a film for BBC and the news got around amongst the dealers that... at an auction that David Messon, this guy, was coming from London. And a bit, they didn't like a big dealer down there because I think they like to try and keep the price low and sell it to the public afterwards, something like that. So they didn't really welcome him. And certainly he didn't seem to appear for a very long time. And then we were filming in the auction house and the auction for this one very special painting was taking place. And no David Messon, and suddenly everybody's eye turned towards the doorway, and there standing like a smaller version of John Wayne, really, in silhouette, was David Messon, who took up the bidding and bought it. And it was my job afterwards, as sort of presenter, to ask him about how he brought the Newlyn School of Painters back to prominence. And halfway through the interview, he said, hang on a minute, I've just placed you, you're Alan Cotton, painter. I said, yeah. He said, what are you doing this lark for? And I said, well, I'm also a kind of communicator, I think. And you say, we've just seen some big Heartland paintings of yours and we're going to approach you. It's an extraordinary coincidence. And so that's how I met him.
Yeah. Well, the coincidence to me, looking through your book, is you could be brothers.
Yeah.
You're obviously younger and more better looking.
Oh, indeed. But
life hasn't been kind to him.
But providing he doesn't know that, that's
yeah,
all right.
Exactly. I love this story about how you used to walk down Cork Street as a young lad and hope that one day that you could have an exhibition there.
Oh, I think Cork Street was always meant a lot to me. I mean, it has been for 2.5 centuries the centre, the street where the art world is, really. And as a kid and a student, I used to go down there and certainly press my nose against the glass and look in and totally intimidated by the galleries. And even, until recently, there are galleries which are so intimidating for people to go into. You know, you sort of walk inside the door and nobody looks up. Mm. And then their eyes follow you around and you think, have I picked up some dog mess on my shoes or something like that? It's like that. And Messum's, thank goodness, is an entirely different thing. Very friendly, great team. And I do see myself as part of a big team, with Messum's. And I've been up there for the last 2 weeks, and we've had an enormous amount of fun. We had a great private view, and I did a dinner for 45 people, which included all the gallery staff.
Oh, great.
And it's a way of saying thanks for all the work they do.
Mm-hmm. Lovely stuff. I understand you're involved with the University of Bath Design for New Arts Complex.
Yes, I am. In fact, this has become very, very important to me. I didn't know Bath University until about 2 or 3 years ago when one day I had a letter from the Vice-Chancellor, Glynis Braquell, asking me if I'd like to come and have dinner with her, which I did. And they showed me when I was up there the plans for this new wonderful arts complex and asked me if I would like to be involved in some way. And I must say, I've been up there and had a lot of free dinner since. but I've got very involved with them and the whole team. And what they're trying to do there is really extraordinary. Quite extraordinary, and I think it's a prize-winning plan. And what they're trying to do is to bring in all the students from all the disciplines to come and do performance arts, music, visual arts, all that. And it really is a great vision that they have.
Wonderful. You've got another vision. You're a prime mover in the plan to gather the Prince of Wales tour artists.
Yes,
for the Prince's Trust, because of course you toured with him in 2005.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Well, it's going well, and in fact, I had a meeting in London last Thursday afternoon, which was really great, because, the tour artists, the ones I've spoken to and the ones we're going to approach, I'm sure, are all going to give paintings, because they've been on the tour over... The Prince has taken artists for over 30 years, and so there are about that number of artists, and most of them, are very well-known artists now. And they've offered to give me paintings, and we're going to do an auction in London, and raise a great deal of money for the Prince's Trust, which is, you know, a fantastic thing.
Wonderful. Really. Love to see that exhibition. Yeah. Incredible leap of faith, then, when you abandoned the financial security of teaching and became a full-time artist. And never looked back, I'm assuming.
No, what a foolhardy thing to do. No, I've never looked back. It's been a roller coaster.
Yeah. And what about new areas? Are there new areas, parts of the world you want to go and paint?
Well, I'd sure like to go and paint in India.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I'm also going to be in the on Everest in April.
Are you?
Yeah, because I have a friend called David Hempelman Adams.
Yes.
Who at the moment is flying a balloon in a European race, and he's currently over Spain. And he's climbed the seven great peaks of the world, and including Everest.
Whew.
And he's taking a little group of real climbers, not me, I have to say, up the North Face, but invited me along as expedition artist to get to Base Camp 1 and Base Camp 2. So, Judy, I'm just about to start training.
Oh, I should think you are. Well, walking home today, I hope. Alan, it's always good to talk to you. The book, Giving Life a Shape by Jenny Peary, is on sale now, and there's a limited edition of 250 copies in a sleeve to include an original silkscreen print that I know. And the exhibition in London goes on until...
It's on for another week now.
Lovely. Thank you so much for coming in today, Alan.
Could I indulge? And just one thing.
Yeah.
The Southwest Academy you mentioned
has
an exhibition which opens this Friday at the Castle in Exeter.
Mm-hmm.
Work from all over the Southwest. Absolutely free. Go and enjoy it. It's a great show.
Thank you, Alan Cotton.